Joe T. Patterson was the Attorney General for the state of Mississippi from 1956 to 1969 when he died in office, which is literally the years of the height of the modern civil rights movement. And he gets inaugurated just a few weeks after the launching of the Mississippi State Sovereignty Commission, which was the infamous state organization that spied on civil rights organizations and activists and just state citizens. So, and he's an ex officio member of it from the beginning. He's a Citizens Council member. He's a segregationist and a state politician at the height of the years of the modern movement.
Is that how he got elected?
He gets elected certainly on a segregationist platform. In 1956, every statewide official is running on a segregationist platform. So Joe Patterson is the legal defense for Jim Crow and the Jim Crow power structure in the state of Mississippi during the civil rights movement.
Did he change the way, or did he maintain the way things were in Mississippi at that time?
Patterson reflected a disagreement within the segregationist power structure. And this is an old disagreement. It's not something that he invented or something that was new, but there had been inherent conflict amongst segregationists about the best way to maintain that power system and how to maintain Jim Crow. And that disagreement was, how do we best maintain that power? Is it by diehard, line-in-the-sand, massive resistance, where we say no, never? Or is that power best maintained by being willing to bend a little, allowing some black advancement in an effort to essentially keep the national federal government at bay and keep the press at bay and keep public attention away from the state of Mississippi? And
again, so this had nothing to do with his feelings about African Americans in society. This was strictly a political move to keep the feds away.
And it absolutely was a political move, and it was very intentional. And really, you see this turning point in 1962 with the Meredith crisis, where you finally have what I would describe as kind of the death knell of hardline resistance, the death knell of the type of resistance that Ross Barnett represented. You're not going to see politicians really gaining ascendancy with that type of rhetoric and that type of policy anymore. Instead, it's going to be more along the lines of what some scholars have described as a type of colorblind politics, meaning that you would have policies, again, that were meant to maintain racist power. They were race-informed, race-based, but did not say anything explicitly about race. So they were implicitly all about race, but explicitly not. For instance, in 1965, you get something like, and Joe Patterson would be at the heart of kind of crafting this for the state, you would have a plan for the desegregation of public schools in 1965, 11 years after Brown, that would be called freedom of choice. Freedom of choice in 1965 is the idea that parents within a school district would have the freedom to choose where to send their children to school. And, of course, that meant that black parents would be free, supposedly, to choose to send their children to any school that they wanted to. From the perspective of a segregationist, this is in many ways a very smart strategy, because freedom and the opportunity to choose a better school on the surface seems like a very American thing. But in reality, what black parent was going to be the first to choose to send their child to an all-white school? But there were some who did. And because there were some who did, Joe Patterson and other segregationists could then say, see, these schools are desegregated. There are two black children who now go to this all-white school. And the reality was, those children faced repercussions at those schools that included outright intimidation and violence, included being resegregated, often in the classroom, always in the lunchroom, in the libraries. And then their parents faced similar repercussions. They could lose their jobs. They might face violence. They might face cross burning in their yard. All of these things.
Who did you write the book for?
The book is written for a number of audiences. I wrote it in part for, obviously, for scholars, because I consider myself a civil rights historian, and it fits within a new type of scholarship that's helping us examine the movement less so from kind of the top-down traditional story of leaders like Martin Luther King and the Kennedys and Ross Barnett, but instead from kind of a local grassroots level that gives us a lot more a deeper understanding and appreciation of what the civil rights movement was really up against. But I also wrote it as a Mississippian for the people of Mississippi, because what I also think it tells is a story about what happened to segregationists. It is almost as if we assume that, again, in kind of our broad national consciousness, that the civil rights movement won and that when it ended, segregationists just gave up and disappeared. But they didn't just move to Tahiti or something. They stayed in the state of Mississippi and they evolved. And really, the subtitle of the book kind of tells that story, Evolving Resistance to Black Advancement. We have to understand that in many ways, the civil rights movement didn't end. And resistance to Black advancement didn't end. It simply changed, and it evolved over time. And some of the conservatism, particularly the right-wing conservatism we see in the state of Mississippi today, I'd argue is directly descended from this evolution.
The book is called Joe T. Patterson and the White South's Dilemma, Evolving Resistance to Black Advancement, and the author is Robert Luckett. Thanks, Ravi.
Thanks, Karen.